Jai Ma. So we start with a little bit of recap of chapter 22. A quick recap. The supreme secret. So why is it that the Gita is using the word supreme secret? Because Vedas are the secret, Upanishads, all this had already gone by and large. I'm not getting into whether the Upanishads preceded the Gita or later, some of the Upanishads are later. So what is it that why Gita is naming it as the supreme secret? So there is something which is missed, something which has not been known thus far. That's why the Gita is revealing it as the supreme secret. So what is known till that time is there is an Isht Devta whom you can worship. And the Isht Devta is a route ultimately to either give you worldly goods or some of them can launch you into Brahman, which is the ultimate bedrock of reality. So we had these two things known in the age of the Upanishads. So there is the world and all that it contains. And there is the divine reality within it. And there is the Brahman consciousness, which is beyond it. And it's the stable basis. So this has been known in the age of the Upanishads. And the Vedas know about it. And so the relation was primarily one of meditation through which you can arrive at the Brahman reality. There is worship, not really love in it, all its flaming intensity. Not surrender in the deepest sense. There is mention of surrender passingly in some of the Upanishads. But if you really go through it, one can see it's primarily about meditation, deep reflection upon the highest truths of existence, which is wonderful. But the Gita is bringing something very new for those days. Now perhaps we may take it as granted. So Gita brings in that beyond the two Purushas, the Shar, which is this mutable world, and the immutable Brahman, there is Purushottama. This is a supreme secret which the Gita is bringing out in bold relief. Its implications are many. To begin with, it explains us the Brahman impersonal reality as is revealed in the Upanishad doesn't explain us, because it's like big gap between something which is vast, impersonal, and we as a personality with seeking for knowledge, half knowledge, love, will, senses. There is a big gap. So the Gita brings this experience of the, it's not just an idea, because Arjun actually has the experience in the Gita of the supreme reality, which is the Purushottama, the divine, as Krishna reveals himself. And there we see that corresponding to this limited human personality, there is a divine personality. And this human personality is only a very inferior derivative. It changes the perspective. So the perspective is that not stifling this little stuff of which we are made, frail stuff, transient stuff, and entering into a state of permanent peace and calm of nirvana, but transforming this stuff of which we are made into its divine reality, divine possibility. This is first time hinted in the Gita, more or less. Well, one can always find some mantras here and there, but by and large, very in bold relief. So why this is the supreme secret? Because it was hidden. So what is the secret? Secret is that we can figure human beings as a miniature divinity. But it is only divinity only as a possibility. It's miniature, but it has to activate. It's like you have a possibility, but you have not activated. It's like a check which you cannot encash. So to encash the check, you need the signature of the owner. So all our human knowledge, love, will, they are all basically limited miniature divinity, but with a possibility of being transmuted into the divine reality, divine personality from which they have derived. So this is the first implication. Transformation seed we find there. So that's why Sri Aurobindo says we are carrying the work of Krishna further. We see the seeds of transformation in the Gita. So this one. Second is then the relation changes. It's not just about that I meditate and know God. But I can love God. I can surrender God. So it's not inferior. All of them come together. I can meditate upon the truth of the divine and therefore grow in knowledge. I can love the divine with all my heart and grow not in knowledge alone, but the divine love and ananda which permeates the universe. I can surrender myself to the will of the Lord and become his servant and slave. So it opens many possibilities of relationship with the divine, and therefore the Gita prepares us for this moment. So all that has gone so far is a preparation. Why this needed as a preparation? So this is the other part people say. If sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam raja aham tva sarva pape bhyo mokshishyami masucha is the ultimate secret. The Gita itself says paramam vacham. Listen to me, the guhyad guhyataram, the secret of secrets. So point is that why not straight away sarva dharman parityajya, I will abandon all my dharmas and take refuge in the divine. Why should I go through all this? So that's where Sri Aurobindo brings out to us the fact that this truth is the ultimate relation between the Jivatma and the Paramatma or the Purushottam. You can't activate it when one is in the state of tamas and says, well, I have surrendered myself to God and now God will do everything. So it's a very powerful truth, and that's why Sri Krishna says, don't talk about it to anyone and everyone. So people often say, oh, surrender to the mother, it's so easy, wonderful. But to reach that point, one has to at least be in some kind of a contact with the Jivatma. And actually speaking, as again he describes in this very chapter, that ordinarily the Jivatma is covered by Sattva, Rajas, Tamas, these three gunas of nature. And even if you tell someone that, look, self-giving is the highest secret, it just won't happen. I know people, they will either not believe in it or they will say, oh, this, it just won't come. It has to come as a natural urge. It is only the psychic being. Sri Aurobindo says that what is the difference between the surrender of the psychic being and the different parts. Says the psychic being gives itself, gives without calculation, wanting nothing, expecting nothing, asking nothing. For the joy of giving. This is the psychic being. The mind can give, but it has certain a priori conditions. Say it wants to understand, it will have doubts, it will have internal conflicts. The vital will give, but it will give only what am I going to get in return. And of course, the physical will do it very mechanically. So it is the deepest of secret which is applies to the relation between the Jivatma and not to any Isht Devta but to the Purushottama. That's what Sri Aurobindo makes very, very clear at the very beginning. And we'll just read that and then go further. This is the supreme secret, and we are on, this starts from page 540. We had read a little bit, so I'll just continue because probably there was some problem with the recording. So what is that supreme secret? Page 540. Therefore, says the teacher, devoting all thyself to me, giving up in thy conscious mind all thy actions into me, resorting to yoga of the will and intelligence, be always one in heart and consciousness with me. If thou art that at all times, then by my grace thou shalt pass safe through all difficult and perilous passages. So there will be difficulties, challenges. But you will pass through it. That's why Sri Aurobindo, even in the mother, says to pass through life, armored against all fear, peril and disaster. Look at the word, armored against. You will go through it, but he will carry you. He also says that if out of some kind of delusion, you say, I will not fight. Supposing you have read a lot of Gandhiji and say, I am not going to fight. Still your nature will compel you to fight. See now Buddhist, many Buddhist monks in Tibet, they take to arms when they realize that nothing works. Because it's nature. Because you are still under nature. So this doesn't apply. You will have to fight. So this is the first thing he reveals. And then the second part on page 541, which is so beautiful. It is no abstract absolute of the philosopher. And actually, if you ask me, mother speaks about it, and I have seen so often, people don't like to surrender because of the ego. The moment you say there is divine to whom you have to surrender, how can it be? I am the best. I am the greatest. So beyond me, an abstract impersonal is acceptable. But someone beyond me, something may be there beyond me, but someone beyond me is... So human mind, very subtle ego has its play. So he reveals no indifferent impersonal presence or ineffable silence, intolerant of all relations. We have this poem, Krishna. There are two poems, Krishna, the one in Critics I am referring to, where he says, oh, no void, absolute. Lips that kiss, red lips that kiss and blow the flute. You see, it's not void, absolute, that supreme reality. And then how does he describe him? All he loves, all he moves, all are his, all is he. So this impersonal is only to reach that point. And I take it like this, that, you know, in many places this is a tradition, that you take a bath or you wash your feet, like in Golden Temple, many temples it will be there. So if you don't want to take a bath, wash your feet before going to the temple, right? So that's a tradition. But what people do, they wear the same cloth. But if you go into the strict tradition, they will give you a dhoti or something there. You change into that. So the impersonal is that buffer zone. Before you enter into the sanctum sanctorum, you have to get rid of all this stupid lower stuff. This ego, desire. You have to leave behind all the jalebi and the samosas. Because otherwise you will have no hands to receive the prasad that divine is going to give you. So this impersonal, one has to enter first. Experience that, so that this, all this ego, my mind, my thinking, my. So that's why he gives, become my-minded, my lover, my devotee. That's what he says. Man mana bhava mad bhakta madhyaji ma namaskuro. Turn all that minus and highness into highness, your highness. So this is the basic idea. So once we have taken the dip in the impersonal, now we are ready to receive from the divine personality. And then we realize that, well, all our lower stuff was only a very shadow preparation for that ultimate truth which we have to embody. So this is what he says. So who is he? It is a master of our works, a friend and lover of our soul. This is a great secret. You don't feel that in the Upanishads and even in the Vedas. This idea of divine as friend, you don't have that in any of the Semitic religions. But divine as a friend, sport, laughter, playmate, comrade, husband, beloved, it comes with Krishna. Krishna brings that. And that's why it is something which you can have a many-sided relationship with the divine. He is the father, he is the mother, he becomes friend, he becomes lover, he becomes playmate, beloved. So that's the beauty, secret which he's revealing. And not just a master. So guru-sishya relation is only one of the relations. That's why in Shurvindo's yoga, the guru-sishya relation is not... when somebody asks Shurvindo, says, if you wish, you can follow it. When they told the mother, that mother, about mother as a guru, she says, you want to bring me down many steps? Guru is one aspect of the divine and the human soul, not the whole aspect. He is father, mother, friend, beloved, lover. Why should I not enjoy all the sights? Even one of the aphorisms of Sri Aurobindo, paramour. This is very amazing. Paramour is someone we secretly love. So whomever we may love, he is a paramour. So this is where he says, indwelling and overdwelling Lord of all our personal and impersonal self and nature, who alone can utter to us this near and moving message. And yet this is not the common relation established by the religions. That's what we have said. You know, you have to be afraid of God. You have to go there, kneel down and supplicate and say, forgive my sins. What does Sri Krishna say? He sports with sin and laughter.
He turns everything into a means for a progress. That is the relation. That's why he abandoned all dharmas. But you have to go through this process. You can't suddenly say in a state of tamas, oh, I have given myself entirely to the mother, but I love my morning dosa and I love my afternoon this thing, snacks, and I love my, when people come and flatter me, and I love, you know, when people give me loads of money, then it is lip service. So it is the ultimate truth. That's why Shrimda says start with surrender. But why does he say culminate also in surrender, detailed surrender? There are many parts which say that we have surrendered, but they have not surrendered. Surrender means now I'll obey only the divine. I live for you. What you do to me, that I want. It may be good or bad, nice, not so nice. I receive it with joy. That is perfected surrender. Central surrender is, yes, I give myself to you in principle. Then it has to develop. So this is the first sutra which he is giving us. Second is, that which surrenders here is the jiva, the essential soul, the original central and spiritual being of man, the individual purusha, the ansa sanatana. This on page 542. It is this central spiritual being in us who thus enters into a perfect and closely real relation of delight and union with the origin and continent and governing self and power of our existence. That's why the mother insists so much on discovery of the psychic being. Only the psychic being can spontaneously understand it, realize it, live it. It doesn't need to read the Gita. You bring out the psychic being, it automatically has this movement that I am mother's child and I give myself completely. Doesn't matter. Whatever she gives to me or doesn't give to me or takes away from me, there is a complete dependence on the Divine Mother. So this is the state, this is the truth he is revealing. And all the manifold relationship. So from there, page 543, another secret emerges, and that secret is, it is the second line, it is the truth of our self and spirit, the truth of its oneness with that spirit from which all comes, and by it and as its derivations and suggestions all exist and travails. It is not a negation but a fulfillment of all that mind and life point to and bear in them as their secret and unaccomplished significance. Thus, it is not by a nirvana, an exclusion and negating extinction of all that we are here, but by a nirvana, because the Gita uses the word Brahma nirvana, but by a nirvana, an exclusion and negating extinction of ignorance and ego, and a consequent ineffable fulfillment of our knowledge and will and heart's aspiration, an uplifted and limitless living of them in the divine, in the eternal. Nivasishyasi mayeva. Now you dwell permanently in the divine. So this is where, you see, these are things which are not there before the Gita. Now because we have heard all this so many times, and the mother and Shobindu have revealed these truths in a very, very beautiful way. So we take it for granted. But you go to a typical traditional Upanishadic lore and people who speak about this, this is something very different and new. So people try to interpret even that in the light of the Upanishads. I've met number of them, but this is something very difficult for them to understand. So this is what he is. So basically it means that we have two lives. Okay. English. 543, last few lines. The life of the ego is founded on a construction of the apparent mental, vital and physical truth of existence, on a nexus of pragmatic relations between the individual soul and nature, on an intellectual, emotional and sensational interpretation of things used by the little limited eye in us. So this is one part. And from there all the dharmas proceed. So basically what are these dharmas? He goes on to describe. So when we are living the life of the ego, life of limitation, then we have to act according to dharma. Otherwise we will slip and fall. I can't say all is the divine when, you know, I am leading the life of the ego. I'll straight away land into the trap of the devil. As Sri Aurobindo says that anarchy is the first and the last word of creation. But if you do it in the middle, you will land straight into the trap of the devil. Ultimate truth is of anarchy. Each one is living by the law of God. This is the truth. But he has cautioned, if you do it prematurely, if you have not gone through this purification process, then all is God, everything is fine, everything is divine, it can land straight. That story of Sri Ramakrishna we have spoken about. That then you have to be cautious, vigilant, where you are going on the road and you see an elephant coming and you say, well, all is God, and the elephant throws you away. And the disciple goes and tells the master, you said all is God. He says, yes, but why did you disregard Mahavat God and the elephant God? Mahavat God told you, didn't he, that don't come too near. So that's why there is a life of the ego in which there are dharmas. By dharma is meant not religion, but ways of being, laws of being. You touch fire, you will burn. You do things which are illegal. You may say, I mean, not lawful in a country. This law may be foolish, agreed. But you can't give that excuse that, look here, you know, I don't believe in law. You may be. Police will say, we'll talk about it later when you are in jail. You can put this argument in the court that I don't believe in man-made laws. It doesn't work like that. But if you have really risen beyond, you will be saved even from the gallows. This is also true. You will be hit and nothing will happen to you. And all of us have had that experience too. So we must be very clear. There are two kinds of lives we lead. One is the life of ignorance driven by ego in pursuit of fulfillment of desire. So there then we have to have the life of dharma, all the nishkam karma, remember and offer. All this is part of that life. Meditation, concentration. Then there comes the life which is free from the basically ego in that deepest sense. Life of separativeness. Your consciousness becomes larger, vaster. And psychic being has stepped into the forefront. And then now it is a different life that begins. And there the conditions are very different. Because now divine takes care. So Arjuna crosses all the battle. He is unharmed. So when he comes out from the battle, he normally, as the protocol is, that the charioteer will come down first, then ask the person who is the warrior to step down. That, like, you know, driver comes down, opens the door. So Sri Krishna is charioteer. So Sri Krishna tells Arjun, no protocols, get down. He doesn't understand because he's all mental format. So he is pushed by Sri Krishna out. And then Sri Krishna steps. The moment he steps, the chariot goes in flames. Because all the deadly arrows that had been shot at the chariot by all these great warriors, they couldn't harm. This is not how it should be. But Sri Krishna had annulled all those things. So there are two kinds of life. This would not apply to others. Abhimanyu died. Many others. So if you surrender to the divine completely with that psychic state, you are like Prahlad, nothing happens to you. But if one prematurely tries to do it and thinks, oh, it's an excuse for all that I can do, then it doesn't work. So that's why we have these two lives. And that's why the whole of the Gita is still relevant. And it has to culminate in Sarvadharman Parityaja. Sarvadharman Parityaja is not a standalone truth. There is a whole yoga behind it. To reach this point where we can say, I abandon myself completely in the hands of the divine. So, this is what he is revealing to us. So, from this life of ignorance and ego, to reach that point of complete surrender, we have to go through that impersonality. So, now we understand impersonality is only a passage. That Brahman state, what it means is that it helps us to get free of the ego identities, the desire self. All this is necessary so that we can reach that point where we can surrender to the divine. So impersonality is like nirvana of impersonality, Akshar Brahm, is like the courtyard of the divine. The moment you enter there, you just can't have desires. It's something so true. There's a story of Swami Vivekananda. So he has problems. I mean, his family members some problem. He had a mother and sister, and they were in abject poverty. So he asked Sri Ramakrishna that, you know, this is their state. Can you ask Kali Mata and do something for them? So he said, you go and ask. She listens to you. I have given you the hotline. Why don't you go and ask? So he goes there, comes out. He says, so you asked her? He says, no. He says, what happened? He says, 3 times I tried. But every time when I went to pray, I would only ask her, give me jnana bhakti vairagya. Give me wisdom, give me love for you, and give me vairagya. He says, I can't ask for my mother and sister. It's so stupid and foolish. So you see, this applies to the psychic being. He has reached that state where he is surrendering. And this was Sri Ramakrishna's way of explaining to him that look here. So, but he cautions that be careful. Page 546, 7-8 lines from above. The pursuit of impersonal truth is turned by these influences into an unsuspected cloak for a system of intellectual preferences supported by our mind's limiting insistence. So there are people who often ask, impersonal means now I'll be like, you know, whatever is happening. So one of the classic examples given in the Indian scripture is that supposing a person comes and seeks shelter at your place because he is being haunted by criminals and he hides there. Now they come, knock at your door and ask, is somebody like this hiding here? What will you do? Speak the truth or tell the lie? So, impersonal is like that. It doesn't lead to the final answers. It's to get rid of your ego self. Not to make a fetish of it. Anything for that matter. Go by whatever the divine wants you to do. So this is where the whole crux of the problem is. So then he speaks about all the different... So that's why the Gita says, page 548, we had already read all this, so I'm just quickly. But the Gita adds a phrase of immense import that alters everything. It's saying something beyond the impersonal. Shar akshar purushottam. So what is it saying? Atmani athomai. The demand is to see all things in the self and then in me. So in the self, the impersonal vastness, and then you have to surrender all this to the divine. That means that I will act under the divine will. It doesn't matter. If the divine says, you be stand with this moment, you stand with this moment. So whatever be the action. The demand is to see all things in the self and then in me, the Ishwara, to renounce all action into the self, spirit, Brahman, and thence into the Supreme Person, the Purushottama. A few lines below, the stress on pure impersonality has this difficulty and incompleteness for us, that it reduces the inner person, the spiritual individual, that persistent miracle of our inmost being, to a temporary, elusive and mutable formation in the infinite. That's why people walk away, they take sannyas and, you know, wherever. But that's not the demand. That is a passage. The ultimate truth is to live and act in the world even as the divine lives and acts in the world. Completely obedient to the divine, completely surrendered to him. This is why impersonality is to help us get rid of the knot of the ego. To discover the true I, which is a child of the divine mother. Okay, so. Last line on this page. It is true that the ego and its limited personality are even such a temporary and mutable formation of nature. And therefore it must be broken and we must feel ourselves one with all and infinite. But the ego is not the real person. When it has been dissolved, there still remains the spiritual individual. There is still the eternal jiva. So this is a great secret. And Shobindu even goes on to say that because there have been world negating philosophies which say that, well, there is no truth, abiding truth of the individual at all. He says, even when there is a complete moksha, you are one with the Brahman, still there is an angle through which the Brahman expresses himself in you. And we see that. After all, in Shankaracharya, it expresses in a certain way. In Madhavacharya, in a different way. You know, who can say which, who has not realized what? So there is the beauty, there is the truth of the spiritual individual, the psychic being, which is not using the term here, which we have to understand. And that's why he keeps saying that if you search by the psychic being, you will end up saying that, well, in Essays on the Gita, this word is not used. But he, in Essays on the Gita, is using the word Ansa Sanatana, eternal portion of the divine. Of course, the psychic being going through the entire development is not there. Okay, that's not needed. But there is in us a spiritual individual and a spiritual self and a spiritual individuality unique to each one. And that's why Swami Vivekananda, who, you know, he's not talking about the ultimate. He's talking about Brahma Nirvana and Nirvana in that. And yet, when he was told that you are saying all these things, but Shankaracharya doesn't say so, his answer is amazing. He doesn't get into verbal dialectics. He says, yes, but I, Vivekananda, say so. Period. This is how it is revealed in him. What is there to discuss? He says, yes, but I, Vivekananda, say so. So, both have had experience of Nirvana, but and that's why it's so important to understand, you know, in, the Samam Brahman that he speaks about. So, in each one, and that's why the delight of multiplicity for which this creation is. Divine will not express in Vivekananda and Shankaracharya in the same way, even though they are both saying apparently the same, that there is Mukti, and neither of them is speaking of the Purushottama. And yet the expression will be different, because this is the abiding truth of the spiritual individual. This, and that makes creation so fascinating. That makes life interesting. That makes multiplicity of delight. So, for which the creation has been. And so he says, few lines below, more, the spiritual individual remains as a little universe of divine existence, at once independent and inseparable from the whole infinite universe of the divine self-manifestation, of which we see a petty portion around us. Meaning thereby, you cannot have a standardized all for yoga which everybody has to do in the standard way. It cannot be. Because in each one, the divine will take delight in its own way. And he says in Essays on the Gita in the beginning, he says, Arjuna asked and Sri Krishna gave the Gita. He says, he will not do this to Buddha and Sri Ramakrishna. If Buddha said, I want to leave and go out of the Sakya kingdom in search of truth, Sri Krishna will confirm this movement in him. Because this is his truth. But with Arjuna, it is not his truth. It is mithyachar. He is acting under the impulsion of the ego and not under the a deeper spiritual movement. So that's why you have a very vast yoga. Sanatana Dharma is like that. There are no standard formats that everybody must do the same thing. Why should they? We can't bore God with everybody doing the same thing. He must have. He loves variety. Okay. So this is about the spiritual individuality, which he is so important. Okay. So, then what is this jiva, the psychic being? Page 550. We have another very interesting secret. How the jiva came into existence? Well, if you ask how did we come into existence in our limited personality, it is the mother. Father is there, but ultimately mother holds the seed, she nurtures and brings out, isn't it? So as far as each individual is concerned, it's a portion of the mother. The same applies to jiva. And that's why the sign of the psychic being is you instantly recognize the mother and turn to her. There are none of these confusion. Oh, was she French? How does it matter? Mother is mother. Was she? It does, because the psychic being recognizes. And that's how you see people. How they recognize the mother. And I have seen people who understand nothing of nothing, but they just spontaneously give themselves to the mother. Whereas there are others who have years of difficulty, decades sometimes, sometimes a whole lifetime, like Dilip Kumar Roy. Always in conflict. European lady, French lady. But there are so many real people who love India. And when they stood in front of the mother, that's it. They don't see a French lady out there. And she's French, wonderful to learn French. But I'm just saying they see the Divine Mother. So this is the difference. So he says that this jiva then is a page 550, 7-8 lines from above. This jiva then is a portion of the Purushottama's original divine spiritual being, a living power of the living eternal. And
one second.
Okay, it'll come. So where he speaks about us as the portion of the Divine Mother. That's how it is come. Of course, in the Gita, he speaks about, he becomes also the mother. So he speaks about my yoni, itada yoni.
Okay.
He is not merely a temporary form of lower nature. Huh, here it comes. He is not merely a temporary form of lower nature, but an eternal portion of the highest in his supreme prakriti. An eternal conscious ray of the divine existence and as everlasting as that supernal prakriti. So this jiva is a child of the Divine Mother. He is using the word supernal prakriti and supreme prakriti. And therefore it lasts forever, just like the supreme prakriti, the divine shakti, the Divine Mother. She lasts forever, the jiva lasts forever. It may choose to withdraw. It may choose to say that, well, I want to be on one of those planes. Or it may plunge here. But always it will be held by the Divine Mother. It described in Savitri Book 1, Canto 3, where, you know, she has confirmed, he is drunk from the breast of the mother of the worlds. That's how he describes. So once again, the last thing is on page 550. About 7-8 lines. It's continuation. This jiva then is a portion of the Purushottama. And then he says, he is not merely a temporary form of lower nature. Which is why? Because this is how the typical Advaita Vedanta presents it. That ultimately it's a temporary thing. It's only for practical purposes. Because there is a big question. Who is getting mukti? This problem is there even in Buddhism. Who gets mukti? If there is no abiding truth of the individual, then who gets nirvana? It's a question mark. Now here it is answered that there is an abiding truth of the individual which is other than the ego personality. So therefore it is a rahasyam uttamam. This mystery of a being implies necessarily a similar supreme mystery of the being of the Purushottama, rahasyam uttamam. It is not an exclusive impersonality of the absolute that is the highest secret. This highest secret is the miracle of a supreme person and apparent vast impersonal that are one, an immutable transcendent self of all things and a spirit that manifests itself here at the very foundation of cosmos as an infinite and multiple personality acting everywhere. See, those who have not read Sri Aurobindo, and when you see he brought all this in 1914-15, when all that we spoke about was the Shankara Vedanta and some of these bhakti movements, where bhakti is also something to ultimately to annul that there is individuality as no abiding truth. Now you can imagine how powerful this is. Okay. So therefore, page 551, some of our favorite lines, it is not the austerity of knowledge alone that can help us. If you want to know Samagram Mam, Vasudevam Sarvamiti, you may read, you may meditate, you may experience, it's not enough. What is needed along with that? It's important, but not alone. There is room and infinite room for the heart's love and aspiration. That's the relation with the Divine Mother of the jiva. Illumined and uplifted by knowledge, a more mystically clear, a greater calmly passionate knowledge. Only Sri Aurobindo can use this word, passionate knowledge. And you remember lines in Savitri when in book 1, canto 2. Her mind was a sea of white sincerity, passionate in flow, had not one turbid wave. It's very amazing. It's a sea which is flowing, it is passionate in flow, but there is not one turbid movement. That's the state of the Purushottama, the Divine Mother. It is by the perpetual unified closeness of our heart consciousness, mind consciousness, all consciousness, satatam mahachittaha, that we get the widest, the deepest, the most integral experience of our oneness with the eternal. So you see, Sri Krishna passingly mentions, rarest of rare is he who knows me in all my aspects, samagram mam. Sri Aurobindo is disclosing the secret. Actually, if you look at Sri Aurobindo's yoga, it is what is just hinted in the Gita. He opens all the doors, and that's why he says in who? We shall tell the whole world of his ways and his cunning. In the who, he is speaking of Krishna. And then he says, we have love for a boy who is dark and resplendent. A woman is lord of us, naked and fierce. And then he says, we shall tell the whole world of his ways and his cunning. See, he's revealing all the secrets. In the Gita, it's just a hint. Traditional commentaries on the Gita don't contain this. And you see, this is so logical. Because if the divine is Purushottama and all of it is derived from that, then it's the logical thing. So we have all Buddhi Yoga, Karma Yoga, everything coming from all this. And then it takes us to that culmination. I'll read about that. So in the ordinary self-view of man, he has to bear the burden of, you know, right and wrong. So all this is in the life of ignorance. This doesn't hold true. It's like a parent who is allowing the child to fall, learn from mistakes. Because this is a process. But the moment the child recognizes and realizes he has grown, and he says, now you take charge of my life, then the rules of the game change. There is a very nice, anyways, it's a Hindi song, but I can read two lines of it. Prabal Prem, I'll translate in English. Prabal Prem ke pale padkar Prabhu ko niyam badalte dekha. Apna maan rahe na rahe par bhakt ka maan na talte dekha. He says, many people don't understand why Sri Krishna changed the rules of the game for Arjun. And he says, because of Prabal Prem, tremendous love. He had surrendered himself like a baby. He said, okay, you tell me what I have to do. I'll do it. And then the rules of the game change. How he changes Jayadrath, Bhad and many others, where he saves him, redeems him. Much later, Arjun probably doesn't even realize how many Bhishma. He breaks his own promise and stands between Arjun and Bhishma, that says, pass through me if you have to touch him. Sri Krishna would not do this to anyone. So that's where is the Nar Narayana, the psychic being. So till we reach this point, we have to act according to Sabhava and Sadharma, and what we call as our freedom is only a shadow. All this we have already read in the previous chapter. So we'll come to the ultimate highest truth. So there are different dharmas given for us. So out of in ignorance, Swabhava and Swadharma are good reference points. Go by your inner deepest urge. That's the Swabhava and Swadharma. You will be in tune with the divine. Closest. It will help you in. And there we see the Chaturvarna. All this he has already described. But there comes a time when we are ready for the Param Shanti, the Param Vacham. And that's on page 555. For after giving out all the laws, 555, the dharmas and the deepest essence of its yoga, after saying that beyond all the first secrets revealed to the mind of man by the transforming light of spiritual knowledge, guhyat, this is a still deeper, more secret truth, guhyataram, the Gita suddenly declared that there is yet a supreme word that it has to speak,
paramam vachah and a most secret truth of all, sarva guhyatamam.
He says, now I am going to take you. So, but this is the process one has to go through.
And what is that? Page 556, very simply. It's very powerful, so wonderful. Become my minded, my lover and adorer, a sacrificer to me. Bow thyself to me thou shalt come. This is my pledge and promise to thee. For dear art thou to me. Abandon all dharmas and take refuge in me alone. I will deliver thee from all sin and evil. Do not grieve. So this great truth, now Sri Aurobindo says that very beautifully he leads us. Page 557. All this personal effort and self-discipline will not in the end be needed. All following and limitation of rule and dharma can at last be thrown away as hampering encumbrances. Look at it. There were people in the ashram and somebody told, mother describes it, that she sent someone, disciple, to get a loaf of bread. She needed it for Sri Aurobindo. And he said, no, but 5 o'clock the bakery is closed. He said, but mother needs it for Sri Aurobindo. The disciple says, great disciples, please get a chit from her. So it is going on from that time. He goes back and kind and gracious mother, she gives a chit. How dare he? Doesn't he know? He gives a chit. So you can imagine. So all these rules go for a six. If she says at midnight, open it, forget it, you know, whatever. So it becomes an encumbrance. Depend alone on the spirit and Godhead within thee and all things and trust to his soul guidance. Turn all thy mind to me and fill it with the thought of me and my presence. Turn all thy heart to me, make thy every action, whatever it be, a sacrifice and offering to me. That done, leave me to do my will with thy life and soul and action. Do not be grieved or perplexed by my dealings with thy mind and heart and life and works, or troubled because they do not seem to follow the laws and dharmas man imposes on himself to guide his limited will and intelligence. He says, I'll then deal with my own way. Sir, people shouldn't think I'm a bad guy. Doesn't matter. Look at the power of this statement. And he says, my ways are the ways of a perfect wisdom and power. That's why he writes in Savitri, our errors are his steps upon the way. He works through the fears, vicissitudes of our lives. He works through the hard breath of battle and toil. He works through our sins and sorrows and our tears. When nothing we can see but drift and bail, a mighty guidance leads us still through all. So these are his ways. He says, my ways are my ways. That knows and love, wisdom and power and love, that knows all things and combines all its movements in view of a perfect eventual result. For it is refining and weaving together the many threads of an integral perfection. Anybody who has walked this path even a little understands what it means. And it is so true and so beautiful. That time you don't understand what's happening. But when after some time you look back, you say, oh my God, only the Lord could have taken me through all this and given me that inner freedom needed. Okay. So finally we come to this Guhyataram, page 558. And now there comes the supreme word and most secret thing of all, Guhyatamam, that the spirit and Godhead is an infinite, free from all dharmas. And though he conducts the world according to fixed laws and leads man through his dharmas of ignorance and knowledge, sin and virtue, right and wrong, liking and disliking and indifference, pleasure and pain, joy and sorrow and the rejection of these opposites through his physical and vital, intellectual, emotional, ethical and spiritual forms and rules and standards, yet the spirit and Godhead transcends all these things. So this is the way offered to the chosen of the spirit.
So this why, when once mother had gone very weak physically, so Champaglalji says, "Mother, doctor has advised, please take chicken soup." She said, "No, I'll not take that." Then Champaglalji said this, "Mother, if I was the chicken, I would like to be taken by you as soup." Mother smiled and said, "Okay, give a few sips." It became prasad. Now Puritans will find it so difficult. Oh, organic and all this will come. So, vegetarianism, non-vegetarianism. So all our ideas are all mental images, and we come to that ultimate. Okay, this is the passage with which we'll stop. All must, page 560, all must be given as material of that transmutation. An omniscient consciousness will take up our knowledge and our ignorance. He will leave nothing. He will not say, "Okay, give me the good things." Mother would say, "Give me all that you don't find good." Sometimes she'll say, "What will I do with your good things? Give me everything." Our truth and our error, cast away their forms of insufficiency, serve dharman parityajya, and transform all into its infinite light. An almighty power will take up our virtue and sin, our right and wrong, our strength and our weakness, cast away their tangled figures, sarva dharman parityajya, and transform all into its transcendent purity and universal good and infallible force. Just imagine what we call a sin. Even that has the power to be transformed. This is a nice bhajan again in Hindi. Yeh le lo ma, paap tumhara. Yeh le lo ma, punya tumhara. Nij charno ki bhakti mujhe do. Take away, O mother, what I call as sin. It's now yours. Take away, O mother, what I call as virtue. I can't say that, in robe of virtue. That's how he says, the gopis, that they gave away the robe of, it's easy to give the robe of sin. But we want to be virtuous. Take away, O mother, the robe of virtue. All that give me is your bhakti, love for you. Just imagine where the Gita takes us, to what culmination. So he says, an ineffable ananda will take up our petty joy and sorrow, our struggling pleasure and pain, cast away their discordances and imperfect rhythms, serve dharman parityajya, and transform all into its transcendent and universal unimaginable delight. All that all the yogas can do will be done, and more. Just imagine, all that the old yogas can do will be done, and more. But it will be done in a greater seeing way, with a greater wisdom and truth than any human teacher, saint or sage can give us. Read the synthesis, first few chapters, you will see Shobhinda is saying this. That her method is, divine method is not the way of the human method. He doesn't act according to our notions of omniscience, omnipotence, goody, goody, goody. He acts according to his way. He will take us sometimes through the battlefield if that be needed. But ultimately we come out and discover what we have to. The inner spiritual state to which this supreme yoga will take us will be above all that is here, and yet comprehensive of all things in this and other worlds, but with a spiritual transformation of all, without limitation, without bondage, sarva dharman parityajya. After a few lines, and there on page 561, and there will be no, five lines from above, and there will be no binding effect on the free soul and the unaffected nature, no unescapable crystallizing into this or that inferior formula, for all the action will be executed by the power of the spirit in a divine freedom, sarva dharman parityajya. People make rules, regulations for everything, and they are necessary at a stage of development. But if you make that as an absolute, then you are missing the whole point. Yoga is to take you to that ultimate freedom. Rules are necessary as steps at a point of time. The more we are near to the material bound nature, the more rules we require. And the more we move towards freedom, rules go away. That is the true freedom, and not the freedom to do anything and everything. That's how it is unfortunately misunderstood.
You say the more we move towards freedom, the
more strong? So the more we move higher and higher, the more we move towards freedom, true freedom. Not what we understand as freedom, that I'll do whatever I feel like. As long as the I is the ego, very simply, it's not freedom but slavery to all kinds of thought suggestions. But true freedom comes as we surrender ourselves completely to the divine, live in him, wake up in him, understand that he is the truth, the essence and everything of ours. Then there is true freedom. But that true freedom is completely obedience to the divine will. That's the other part of it. That the mother says, there is no other freedom. He will not allow it because there will be chaos in the world. Creation will collapse. Already there is enough. So, we close with this. For all the action will be executed by the power of the spirit in a divine freedom. Sarva dharman parityajya. Last passage. The whole yoga is revealed. The great word of the teaching is given. And Arjuna, the chosen human soul, is once more turned. No longer in his egoistic mind, but in this greatest self-knowledge to the divine action. The vibhuti is ready for the divine life in the human. His conscious spirit for the works of the liberated soul, muktasya karma, destroyed is the illusion of the mind. That's how he says, nasto moha. No more bewildered. Destroyed is the illusion of the mind. The soul's memory of itself and its truth concealed so long by the misleading shows and forms of a life has returned to it and become its normal consciousness. So then we can say, Keshava, I know I am your child. I am ready, mother, for whatever you want to do. In me, through me, with me. That's the state it takes us. It can turn to the execution of the command and do faithfully whatever work for God and the world may be appointed and apportioned to it by the master of a being, the spirit and Godhead, self-fulfilled in time and universe. Chema. Yes. Perfect. Okay.